Thank you very much. It's really a great honor for me to be part of this conference. So I really want to thank the organizer for giving me this this nice opportunity to present this work. And okay, so let me start. So this is mainly based on a work, a recent work in collaboration with Lorenzo Di Pietro, Davide Gaiotto, and Jingxiang Hu. But hopefully, if time permits, I will also try to comment on more recent developments also in collaboration with Conor Behan and Balvin Rees. So let me start with a quick overview. And of course, you are absolutely invited to ask questions whenever you want. Okay, so let me start. So the main goal of this talk will be to discuss a construction of 3D abelian gauge theories, at least in the putative infrared conformal phase. A construction which is a bit unusual with respect to the more canonical one, in which we usually start from some 3D Lagrangian in the UV with some three-dimensional Maxwell, with some 3D gauge fields, and then with some matter, and we flow to the infrared fixed point. Instead, today I'm going to present a slightly different construction. Well, actually very different. So I'm going to realize these 3D abelian gauge theories as conformal boundary conditions for four-dimensional Maxwell field. So the idea, if you want to keep in mind some kind of cartoon, is that in my construction, I will be always keeping conformality explicit, so I will not follow any RG flow. So I will keep conformality explicit at all steps in my derivation at the price of extending the original 3D dynamics to a four-dimensional space with a boundary. And so just to keep in mind this cartoon, the idea is that at the boundary of the space, you will always, if we find generically some interesting three-dimensional conformal field theories, we'll see some examples. But the bulk of this space is just a free Maxwell field. And construction is actually simple. So the idea is that we'll start by defining a family of conformal boundary conditions for the Maxwell field. This family is called B of tau and tau bar, and it is parametrized by the complexified gauge coupling tau. And now the idea is that this construction has some interesting properties. So there will be at least a decoupling limit in which I'm able to decouple the bulk from the boundary in such a way that I'm left with a free Maxwell field in the bulk, plus some decoupled 3D CFT with the U1 global symmetry on the boundary. But then the interesting observation is that thanks to the electromagnetic duality, I'm able to relate this decoupling limit to a new decoupling limit, a different decoupling limit in which instead at the boundary I find a new 3D CFT. And crucially, this new 3D CFT can be described generically by 3D abelian gauge fields. So this is the way we can say that we can construct these 3D abelian gauge theories. So I think there are various motivations for why this setup it's interesting. Let me sketch a few of them. The first observation is that this is a very simple example of a boundary conformal field theory. It's extremely simple, but it's non-trivial. It's simple because the bulk of this theory is just free Maxwell field, so it's Gaussian, it's free. But as we will see, I mean, the boundary theory maybe is generically strongly coupled. So it's highly non-trivial. And on one side, we can use a bootstrap tool to analyze this setup because we have the symmetries preserved, the conformal symmetry preserved by the boundary. So bootstrap tools like the conformal bootstrap, the boundary conformal bootstrap. But also we can learn some interesting things from the action of the electromagnetic duality, so from the gauge side. The gauge theory side. I will explain this, of course. This will be one of the main points of this discussion. I want to point out that I'm not an expert about condensed matter applications, but I want to point out that, I mean, these models in which in which you have some interesting 3D dynamics coupled to some gauge field coming from an higher dimensional bulk. They appeared in some condensed matter literature, in particular for some kind of effective field theory for graphene, and also with relations with the fractional Hall effect, and in particular these models are discussed in papers by Son. Another important point, which is kind of one of the main motivations for this whole construction, is that, as I will explain, we will be able to turn these very abstract considerations into a very powerful computational tool, which, at least in conjunction with the famous web of 3D dualities, like the particle vortex dualities and the various generalizations, we will be able to turn this construction into a computational tool that is morally, well, alternative to the epsilon expansion and the large NF. In particular, we will use this computational tool to address some interesting quantities for 3D abelian gauge theories, and also, in particular, we will test this tool to compute some quantities like the energy, the anomalous dimension of the energy operator of the O2 model, as well as the S3 partition function, and we also say something about the S3 partition function of QAD at large N F. So let me start from the very simple situation in which I have a Maxwell field coupled to a trivial theory at the boundary. This is the case of free conformal boundary conditions, and it is interesting because we will see this interesting action of the electromagnetic duality on the boundary condition. So it's already non-trivial. Just to set up the conventions, I will always be dealing with a four-dimensional bulk flat with a three-dimensional boundary, and there is one transverse direction, which is this y. Okay. So the theory I'm considering just a free Maxwell field on this space, free Maxwell field written in terms of the cell dual and the anti-cell dual component of the field strength and the complexified gauge coupling. Now, to obtain the boundary conditions for this theory, one just does the usual procedure. You compute the variation of the, you compute the boundary term in the usual way. And if you do so, the variation of the boundary term looks like this. So basically, you have to set this object to zero. And if you want to preserve conformal symmetry on the boundary, so this is three-dimensional conformal symmetry, basically, you're left with two possibilities. Either Dirichlet boundary condition, so you set this is the boundary limit of the four-dimensional gauge field. Okay, so you set this to zero, and this gives you two Dirichlet boundary conditions, so you can set to zero this other term, which gives you Neumann boundary conditions. Now, these two possibilities can be rephrased in a gauge invariant way in terms of very important objects, so the boundary current. So one can easily check that due to the equations of motion, the Bianchi identity in the bulk, these two objects, I hat and j hat, are conserved boundary currents. So in terms of these two objects, the Dirichlet boundary conditions are just to say that, j is set to be a free operator on the boundary, and I hat is set to zero, and vice versa in the Neumann case, J hat is set to zero and I hat is free. And then what we are saying is that the theory that leaves us the boundary is just the mean field theory for the current that is not set to zero. Okay, now there is already an interesting twist because we know that there is this group of SL to Z transformations that leaves invariant the equations of motion and the Bianchi identities. This acts in a very non-trivial way on the coupling constant. And now, the interesting thing is that since this object, this group also acts on the field strength and it's dual, it will also act in turn on the I and J that I defined before. So in particular, I and J are rotated by an SL to Z matrix. So this tells you two things. First, that, you see that the electromagnetic duality acts on the boundary conditions, and also that in particular, there is a more general set of free conformal boundary conditions, which is labeled by two integers PQ, which is just, and this set of boundary conditions is just that you set to zero some integer combination of I and j, and then you are left with the orthogonal one if you want. And again, to realize this more general set of boundary conditions, one in general needs to consider adding more degrees of freedom of the boundary. These degrees of freedom will be topological. So it is still true that the theory at the boundary that describes this boundary condition will be a mean field theory. But in general, it's not just it will contain additional degrees of freedom. Okay, so now this was a very simple case. Now let's try to see what happens in the interacting case. Okay, there is a very natural way to construct interacting boundary conditions for a Maxwell field. If you have a 3D CFT with a Young global symmetry, then the idea is that you can always try to couple this 3D CFT with a Young global symmetry with the Maxwell field with Neumann boundary conditions by just gauging the U1 global symmetry of this 3D CFT, which in practice means that at least in the limit where the bulk and the boundary are almost decoupled, you can imagine adding this term, which is just the usual gauging term. We are gauging, well, we are coupling, so the boundary limit of the bulk gauge connection with the constant current of the CFT whose global symmetry is this U1. Now, I want to point out that this is a four-dimensional gauging in a sense that this connection is coming from the bulk, okay? It's not, doesn't have a kinetic term in three dimensions, in a sense. It's a four-dimensional gauge field. Now, if you recompute the boundary conditions due to the presence of edge modes from this theory, the J that I defined before will be now identified with the J of the CFT. And in general, this procedure defines an interacting set of correlators. So I and J will be very different from those of mean field theory, so that the correlation function of these guys will be a non-trivial function of tau and tau bar, and everything becomes kind of interacting. But now, what is still true is that by construction, if I take tau going to infinity, tau appears as in the kinetic term of the 4D Maxwell field. So if I take tau equals infinity, this kinetic term becomes effectively very big and it decouples. So what I'm saying is that by construction, this current J high decouples, and we recover the case of free. We recover our original 3D CFT with the Young global symmetry, plus a decoupled mean field theory sector, which is just tells us that indeed we started from the four-dimensional Maxwell field with Neumann boundary conditions. Okay, so this of course does not guarantee that the boundary conditions are conformal. One has to be to check that all the coupling constants in the game are fixed to criticality. It's easy to understand why the gauge coupling tau it's exactly marginal. And the reason is that it is the coefficient of a bulk operator. And by locality, boundary interactions cannot renormalize this bulk operator. And given that in our setup we consider just interaction on the boundary, it follows that that tau is exactly marginal. Now, in general, what is non-trivial is what happens to... So if we at the moment we couple the 3D CFT to the bulk, in principle, we should worry about running of boundary couplings as a function of tau and tau bar, and we have to set these boundary couplings to criticality. And this, in general, may be non-trivial. So it may be that, for example, there may be some obstruction if at the boundary we have some marginal operator. So except for these very specific cases, in general, we can assume that we can set to criticality these boundary couplings. And then this whole construction gives us a continuous family of BCFTs parametrized by this gauge coupling tau. Okay, so what is this family? If we now forget about the bulk, in a sense, we integrate out the bulk and we look at the three-dimensional theories, well, this B of tau and tau bar is just a conformal manifold of 3D theories, 3D conformal field theories. But crucially, because, of course, there is interaction with the bulk, these 3D CFTs will not be local. They will not possess a three-dimensional stress tensor conserved. So along this conformal manifold, now we have this conformal manifold, and of course there are some special points. Okay, So the special points are, for example, points in which I'm able to decouple the bulk from the boundary. And by this argument that I presented before, I should be able to expect an emergence of a local 3D CFT. Okay. Now, what are these points, these decoupling limits? Well, there is, of course, the original one. This must work by construction. Okay. So if I take tau going to infinity, my family of boundary conditions, my boundary CFTs, should split into two decoupled sectors. One is the mean field theory sector for the current tau, which is just reminding us that there is a bulk, a four-dimensional Maxwell field with Neumann boundary conditions. But apart from this decoupled sector, we should find the 3D CFT with the U1 global symmetry we started with. Okay, so let me call this T01. Now, the interesting observation is that because of the electromagnetic duality, the same statement has to be true if I go to a cusp on the real axis. So if I plug tau equals minus q over p, where q and p are integers. Now, this in another SL2Z duality frame corresponds to tau prime equals infinity. And therefore, the same statement has to be true. So I should find that my boundary CFT will splits into two decoupled sectors. One is the mean field theory sector for the SL2Z transform current. And the other one is a new 3D CFT with the U1 global symmetry, which I'm calling now TPQ. So the interesting observation is that these T01 and TPQ are not really independent in a sense that TPQ can be obtained from T01 by acting with SL2Z. And what is this action? Well, this action is just famous Witten's SL2Z action on 3D CFTs with the U1 global symmetry. So let me just recall what it is. The idea is that if you perform an S duality, which in the bulk maps tau to minus 1 over tau, the effect on the boundary theory is that you actually gauge the U1 global symmetry with a three-dimensional gauge field. Okay. So the effect is to gauge the U1 global symmetry, where now gauging means really a 3D gauging. And instead, the shift in the theta in tau corresponds to add the Chern-Simons contact term for this global U1. So this is just to say that in general, these TPQ theories admit a description in terms of 3D abelian gauge theories with the U1 global symmetry. Now this whole construction gives us some immediate interesting application, I think. So the idea is the following. So we first assume that we are able to interpolate, we first assume that we are able to move freely along this conformal manifold without encountering any phase transition. But then the idea is that, of course, as I told you, now this family of conformal boundary condition interpolates between this data of infinitely many 3D gauge theories, TPQ, with the U1 global symmetry. Which just means that if you are so powerful that you know some data, I don't know, two-point function of some current, or as a function of tau and tau bar, of course, you will be able to just approach all the cusps. Okay, this is, of course, unfortunately, we are not infinitely powerful. So the idea is more like the following. We can imagine that we know everything about T01 may be like a simple theory, maybe a free theory, for example. Imagine that T01 is a free theory. Then the best you can do is to try to do perturbation theory around the cusp at infinity to see how the data of T01 changes as you couple it to the bulk. And then basically you can recover some data of this T01 as in a small neighborhood around tau equals infinity. Then again, unfortunately, since we are not infinitely powerful, we cannot compute infinitely many terms in perturbation theory. We have to find a way to resum it. In a sense, find a strategy to find to resum it. But if we have a way to resum this perturbation theory, then we can use it to approach the data of these theories as well. So good. This is, of course, difficult. And the idea is that there is a best case scenario. Now, this best case scenario is the following. Imagine that you know two theories along this conformal manifold. For example, you know T01, and let's say that you know some theory here. I don't know, or here, whatever. Some theory at the cusp, TPQ. And maybe for some magic, these two theories may be conjectured to be equivalent. Okay, so imagine that these are free theories, for example. So the idea is that now you can do perturbation theory around both cusps, and now you can try to well, of course, now if you do the resummation, this resummation will be much more constrained, because you can try to look for a resummation that is invariant under the cell to z orbit that maps one into another. And then, well, you will just have a much stronger, let's say, resummation that, and you can try to use it to approach this data. Now, okay, so the interesting, the good news is that this best case scenario, it's at the end not that exotic, precisely thanks to the particle vortex duality and the various generalizations, like fermion boson dualities and et cetera. So let me just explain it a bit. Well, the idea is that now, so start, now place an O2 model at tau equals infinity. When I say O2 model, I mean a theory of a complex scalar with quartic interactions tuned at the critical point. So you place the O2 model at tau equals infinity, and now, well, you couple it to the bulk, and now you try to go to tau equals zero. Now, following the action of SL to Z, this theory at tau equals zero can be described by a version of the O2 model in which you gauge the U1 global symmetry of the O2 model. Okay. So in principle, the theory that lives here, it's a 3D CFT that has nothing to do with the O2 model. As I said, it's a version of the O2 model with some 3D gauge fields. Okay. But now I can invoke particle vortex duality, which is exactly the statement that these two theories, well, the theory that lives here and the theory that lives at tau equals zero, are equivalent, are dual to each other. So that's why I put the O2 model both here at the infinity cusp and at tau equals zero. Good, very good. Now, a similar magic happens thanks to the boson fermion duality. So if you now, instead of going here, you go to the cusp at tau equals one, or the cusp of tau equals minus one, well, this theory, again, are some version of the O2 model with some gauge fields and some Chern-Simons term. And of course, they are new theories, but the point is that thanks to the boson fermion duality, this theory is are actually described by a theory of a single free Dirac fermion. So that's why I'm able to construct this nice plot, this nice diagram in which I have the O2 model at the two cusps, at tau equals infinity and tau equals zero, and then the three Dirac fermions here. Which means that, well, we can try to do perturbation theory, for example, around the Dirac fermion, compute a few orders. We can try to match this perturbation theory along like this line, so meaning doing some Padere summation that takes some S-duality improved Padere summation, and then try to use it to compute some data of the O2 model. And this is exactly what we are going to do. So what are the interesting observables that we can consider? Well, given that the interesting dynamics is three-dimensional, we can consider computing scaling dimensions and OP coefficients of local operators on the boundary. We can also compute, we will focus on this case, but in particular, one can compute current central charges and boundary anomalies. These are also very interesting. And then another interesting observable that we will be computing is the boundary free energy, which I'm going to define in the next slide. I just want to mention that, in principle, given that we have a gauge theory in the bulk, we also have Wilson lines, bulk Wilson lines ending at the boundary. And the endpoints of these Wilson lines, in principle, one can try to compute the dimension of these endpoints. So these are also observables. And okay, I'm not discussing this case, but it's interesting. So what is the boundary free energy? I'm going to just define this, and then we try to see some results. Okay, so the boundary free energy was defined by David a few years ago. It's a very natural observable that one can associate to any boundary conformal field theory in four dimensions. Okay, and it's natural in various senses. It's natural because first it is tested to be monotonic under boundary RG flow in many examples. So it is conjecturally monotonic under boundary RG flows. It is just a very natural extension of the S3 partition function for local 3D CFTs. Okay? Now we take it as a definition, and now we have to compute this ratio. So what is this ratio? So the first thing is, okay, so we have our theory on half space, and the boundary is this green line. So the first step is to value scale it to an hemisphere, where now the boundary is this S3. And so then we can compute the partition function of the theory with the boundary, with prescribed boundary conditions here on the S3. And this is just the partition function of the theory without the boundary. Okay, this is what we are gonna do. And interestingly, in our case, it's not a very deep fact at the end, but in our, so this object can be just, it's fixed in terms of, it's almost completely fixed in terms of local, of CFT data of your boundary CFT. So imagine you compute the derivative of the of this boundary F with respect to the imaginary coupling, the imaginary part of tau. So clearly, doing this, you lower an integrated one-point function of the marginal operator that couples to the imaginary part of tau, and this operator is just F mu, F squared. Now, so the one-point function of F squared is different from zero because you are in the presence of a boundary. And in general, it is non-zero in a very in a way that is fixed by symmetry. So one-point function of scalar operators takes this form. This is a power in the transverse distance, and the only unfixed coefficient beside the conformal dimension, which in the case of F squared is, of course, 4, it's the one-point function, which is a non-trivial function of tau and tau bar, of course. So this is why these derivatives gives you the one-point function of F squared. And similarly, there is a similar equation for the real part of tau, which will be, this is the one-point function of F mu nu, F tilde mu nu. Okay, so there is an interesting observation that this is really thanks to the simplicity of our Hurwitz setup, the fact that the boundary, the fact that we have equations of motion, if you want. So these one-point functions are actually completely fixed in terms of the two-point functions of the boundary currents I and j I defined before. How? Well, it is like a boundary bootstrap argument, which is actually, pictorially, this is the thing. So the idea is, imagine you want to compute the two-point function of f mu nu f rho sigma in the presence of this boundary. You have two different ways of computing this, two different channels. In one channel, you expand in terms of the boundary operators that can couple to F, but again, because of the equations of motion and the Bianchi identities, you have just these two currents, these two conserved currents, I and J. So this means that this side is just a finite sum of operators and can be computed explicitly in terms of the two-point function of these guys, okay? Similarly, on the other side, the bulk, so here you're expanding using the bulk OP, which is completely controlled by free theory. So again, you know it, and this is also a finite sum. So you can just match power by power, and you find these relations, okay? So this is just to say that if you know the two-point functions of these conserved currents, and up to an initial condition, you can integrate the differential equation before, and you obtain F. What is this initial condition? Well, of course, this initial condition is nothing but the decoupling limit. By construction, the point is that if I take tau going to infinity, I should expect to find the boundary free energy of a four-dimensional Maxwell field with Neumann boundary conditions, plus the S3 partition function of the theory I started with, T01, okay? And now the observation, again, is thanks to the SL to Z, the same statement is true. In a sense, there is a similar statement if you now go to the gauge cusp. So if you take tau prime going to infinity, you go to this cusp, well, the same structure of singularities holds for the transformed coupling, except that now the finite piece will be the S3 partition function of your TPQ theory. So this also gives you the strategy. So if you know this guy exactly, for example, the S3 partition function of the free fermion, and you can compute in perturbation theory in 1 over tau, this guy. So this guy, you can just take the other limit in the gauge cusp. You just need to subtract the singularity, but then the constant piece will be the S3 partition function of your TPQ theory. And we will apply this strategy for to compute the partition function of the O2 model and also large enough QED3, starting from the free fermion. So again, let me just summarize with this idea. So the idea is now I have a Dirac fermion at tau equals infinity, a Dirac fermion at tau equals zero. I can do perturbation theory around both cusps, match. I compute a few orders. I can try to resum this perturbative expansion with some S-duality improved by the ansatz, and then I will go to the O2. I will extrapolate to the O2 model. First, the observables are, for example, one can consider the anomalous dimension of the mass operator of the Dirac fermion, so around the Dirac fermion cusp, because this will be naturally mapped to the energy operator of the O2 model. And there is nothing mysterious here, so the idea is that you can just do perturbation theory on the boundary. The only complication is that the two-point function of the gauge field is now non-local, because, of course, the kinetic term comes from the bulk. But besides this, one can compute the anomalous dimension and finds these kind of expressions in terms of tau and tau r, which is OK. I mean, it's not particularly important, but it's just a usual perturbative expansion tool. So for the boundary free energy, as I said, there is a similar statement. One needs to compute the two-point functions of I and j. One can just compute them in perturbation theory. For example, this is two-point function of j hat. You see, this is the leading term is just the two-point function of a free Dirac fermion plus corrections. And now you plug into your differential equation, you integrate it, and you find this, this perturbative expansion for the free energy, so for the boundary f. So there is the logarithmic piece, and there is my initial condition, the strip partition function for the Dirac fermion, which is known. So last step. What is the extra? So we have to do the extrapolation. So we need to find we need to resum this perturbative expansion by eventually imposing this S-duality property. One can use some ansatzes that were found in this paper in the context of N=4 superior means. Of course, there are other possibilities. The idea here is that we have two functions at two loops, and we need to match this constant, these parameters, H1 and H2, with the perturbation theory, or H3 or H4. And if you do so, if you use these ansatzes, these are manifestly invariant under S2-ality. It will work if you do it for the cusp at tau equals infinity, it will work also for the cusp at tau equals zero. Yes? Ah, sorry, the microphone. You mean at the cusp at tau equals zero, at tau equals infinity?
Well, you have F1 and F2.
Ah, no, these are just the two possible ansatzes. So these are two possibilities.
What are the two limits?
I'm comparing with tau equals infinity, where I have a Dirac fermion, and I'm comparing with tau equals zero, where I also have a Dirac fermion. So let me go. I do this. So I have a Dirac fermion at tau equals infinity, a Dirac fermion at tau equals zero. And now I do perturbation theory around here, and if you want, around here. And by using this Pade ansatz, which is manifestly invariant under S-duality. This is just a decision. It's not fixed by anything. I'm just saying that I can start from a free Dirac fermion at tau equals infinity, but then what is true is that by the famous web of 3D dualities, I can compile this nice plot in which I also have if I believe the fermionic particle vortex duality, then tau equals infinity corresponds to a Dirac fermion, and also tau equals zero corresponds to a free Dirac fermion. And similarly, I have the O2 models here. Yes, precisely. So this is just a theory of a free Dirac fermion. but I'm taking is the U1 current of this free Dirac fermion and uncouple it to the boundary limit of the four-dimensional bulk gauge connection. If I now perform an S duality, if I just perform an S transformation, let's say the theory that appears here, it's just the theory can be rewritten as a theory of a free Dirac can be rewritten as a theory in which I gauged this U1 global symmetry with a three-dimensional gauge field. And now I invoked the fermionic particle vortex duality, which tells me that the theory here it's indeed also a Dirac fermion. Please tell me if I was not clear. Okay. Now, what are the comparisons? Well, the first observation is that one can try to do now extrapolate to obtain the energy operator of the O2 model. And one can compare with various results from epsilon expansion and the bootstrap. So the O2 model lives here, okay? And these are the F1 and F2. So F1 and F2 are just the two possible Padé ansatz that are invariant under S duality, okay? And I fixed for each Padé ansatz, I fixed the parameters in order to match with the perturbative expansion in 1 over tau around the two cusps. So if you do so, you can compare. So this is the epsilon expansion at very high loop. This is the bootstrap. Now, of course, I mean, you see that, for example, the F1, it's pretty off. But the F2, it's not that far. And so this, I think these plots have to be taken cum grano salis, because, of course, we just resummed some two-loop perturbation theory, so we don't expect to find a precise match, of course. But definitely, it may improve, probably, if you... Well, hopefully, it will improve if you include more order or you find a better Padé answer. For the S3 partition function of the O2 model, it's even more interesting, because now we don't have predictions from the bootstrap, but we have prediction from the epsilon expansion at very high loop. And you see the epsilon expansion is here, and the prediction from our F2, which works better than the F1, apparently, is here. So I think this is a nice result, because in our case, to compute this S3 partition function, we just need to compute a two-point function in perturbation theory on the boundary and then run this machinery. So in principle, the computation of the epsilon expansion for the S3 partition function is very, very complicated, actually. So there is also an interesting check that one can do, which is kind of non-perturbative in the coupling constant. One can try to reproduce the large enough behavior of S3 partition function of QAD. So the idea is you start with the 2NF free Dirac fermions at the boundary with the same charge, such that there is a U1 global symmetry. And now you take large NF by keeping fixed G squared NF. This is our Hitzhov coupling. You can just compute these two-point functions in 1 over NF exactly if you want in the Hitzhov coupling. And therefore, as a consequence, you compute this partial F exactly in the Hitzhov coupling. So now, if you take the limit in which lambda goes to infinity, this corresponds by SL to Z. It should correspond to the limit in which, so the theory that lives at lambda equals infinity is an S duality version of the theory that lives at lambda equals zero. And it corresponds to gauge the U1 global symmetry that gives charge 1 to all these fermions. So this is exactly what you call what you may call the large NF QAD tree. Now, if you just do this computation, well, you find on the nose the first term, the first two terms that were computed by this group for the S3 partition function of QAD, a large NF, and almost for free you get a 1 over NF correction, which is a new prediction. So before concluding, let me just discuss a few interesting directions, okay? So I hope you got convinced that this space of conformal boundary conditions is very interesting. So it's very rich. And so in the case of the free Maxwell theory, we found all these, well, in a sense, we found all these 3D Abelian gauge theories, okay? So there are, the interesting observation is that there are some universal features. So as I said, thanks to the equation of motion and the Bianchi identity, there must be two conserved currents at the boundary, I and J. So this is a universal feature. There must be I and J at the boundary. Also, another interesting observation is that, the bulk is free. And the fact that the bulk is free gives you infinitely many constraints on the correlation functions, okay? These constraints are, let me try to tell you how these constraints work. So you find infinitely many constraints between the correlation functions involving currents I and J, okay? Now, let me tell you how it works. Well, the idea is, again, based on a boundary bootstrap argument. So imagine you were to compute the three-point function between f mu nu, f rho sigma, and a generic operator O hat at the boundary. Now, this is generic. Again, so because in the bulk to boundary expansion of f, you have just two operators, I and j, this turns out to be a finite sum over operators, okay? So you can just compute this right-hand side as a function of the three-point functions, if you want, involving j, I, and O hat. So you have the kinematics is completely fixed, okay? So you can just compute it. But now the interesting observation is that because the bulk is free, clearly when you take these two operators to be colliding in the bulk, this limit cannot be singular, because the bulk is free, so this bulk to boundary OP, this bulk OP, it's controlled by free theory. The only singular term is the identity. But when I replace the identity in this three-point function between f, and O hat, the identity does not contribute, because the one-point function of O hat is zero. So if you take now this limit from this closed form expression that you find here, and you impose that it's non-singular, this on the nose gives you some relations between the three-point functions, between these currents and a third operator, generic. This just because they are a bit lengthy, but they are very concrete. So the idea is that you find that in principle you have some three-point functions, I and a certain operator, ij and a certain operator, jj and a certain operator, and these are not independent. These a and b are functions of the conformal dimension and the spin of this guy, and can be computed explicitly. They are some gamma functions. So now, why this is important? Well, because if now you want, the idea is, okay, you can now try to bootstrap it. So you can try to consider the four-point functions of these currents. So you have a system of mixed correlation functions between I and J. And if you now expand it in conformal blocks, well, you are going to find exactly these coefficients. So instead of having three families of independent coefficients, you can impose these relations, and you are left with a single OP coefficient. So this gives you an infinite amount of constraints on the CFT data, on the boundary. And one can try to do numerics and see whether this tells us something concrete about the space of conformal boundary conditions for a Maxwell field. This is very ambitious. It's not conceptually difficult. It's just at the level of technology difficult, because, of course, it's just the four-point function of these conserved currents are a bit complicated, and the bootstrap has been done, by the way, for the case of a single conserved current, okay? So it's just a technical difficulty. So that's why one can consider actually a simpler example, which is extremely interesting as well. And it's very, very similar, so I will just sketch it, okay? So this is the content of the works in progress, which include also Balt and Connor. Again, so one can consider having a free scalar in the bulk and try to ask what is the space of conformal boundary conditions for this free scalar? Fix the dimension of the bulk, for example. And again, it's the same. So in a sense, it works in a very similar way. Equation of motion in the bulk tells you that there must be two protected operators at the boundary. These protected operators are phi evaluated at the boundary and the normal derivative evaluated at the boundary. So this may, one of them may be zero, of course, but I mean, this is the most general case is that they are both present. And again, because the bulk is free, one can run the same, exactly the same logic as I explained before, and one find, for example, this relation. So this is just the case for dimension, just for simplicity, but just to show you that the relation between these data, it's very concrete, okay? So now these relations are valid for any generic operator O hat, and one can just feed the numerical bootstrap for the correlation function between the four-point function of these objects with these relations. And hopefully, I mean, these are infinitely many constraints, so it may be maybe a wishful thinking, but it may work. It may give some interesting solution, okay? So just to conclude, okay, so the idea is that we explore the space of free boundary conditions for Maxwell field, and I also discussed a bit this case of free scalar. And it's very interesting. So if we can exclude the phase transitions, we can approach the data of an infinite family of 3D abelian gauge theories. And this is, I think, it's extremely cool, using these 3D dualities plus perturbation theory plus Wade ansatz. One can try to use it to define a new computational tool. And we checked these, for example, we tried to use it to compute some data of the O2 model. And also, we reproduce the large enough behavior of the state partition function of QAD3. So there are some future directions beside the bootstrap one that I think it's extremely interesting. One can, of course, try to see whether this method works also for other observables, try to include higher loops correction, try to find better Padé approximants. There is an entire zoo of things that one can do. And I think a very interesting question is, what happens if the bulk is not free? And I don't have any answer. But I think given that there are these interesting relations among the CFT data, one can wonder how these relations get modified. For example, if you have like an OM model in the bulk, and you look at this OM model at large enough. And these, I think, are all valid questions. And if you have any comment, I mean, I'm very, very happy to hear it. And so, thanks.
Questions? In these relations for the 3-point coefficient that you flashed.
Yes.
Are there special values of delta where the?
Yes. Yes. Precisely. So if you, of course, here I'm being very sketchy, but the point is that one has to. So there are the relations that you find are in a sense analytic in the delta and the spin, the parallel spin for this boundary operator. And you see that the poles and the zeros of these gamma functions, they conspire, and they match precisely with the fact that for certain representations, these operators are not exchanged. So these spatial values corresponding to the poles, for example, they tell you that some OP coefficients is actually zero. And actually, yeah, it's actually very interesting. So by the way, I should mention that the same kind of relations appeared in a very nice paper by Connor, in which he studied the long ranges in model. A very similar set of relations appear because in the long ranges in model, you have some non-local equations of motion. This is kind of the same, so also here. So in a sense, one can also try to, so from the point of view of the boundary, these relations, if you forget about the bulk, from the point of view of the boundary, this relation seems to be extremely magic. But in fact, they come out from the fact that there is some integral transformation between this operator O1 and O2.
Other questions? Not, let's thank Eduardo again.